Hello, I'm Todd Gallagher. This is number 0376, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0376. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actress and screen legend Tippi Hedren is back on the show. She has written her biography in a book simply titled Tippi, A Memoir. It follows the many paths she has taken in life.
I do that, and I'm thrilled that I have had those doors opened to me, and I find it interesting which of the doors that have been opened to me that I go through, and those that I find interesting and powerful, and how it has really been able to enhance my life.
Tracy Gosell, author of The First King of Hollywood, The Life of Douglas Fairbanks. It started when she bid on Fairbanks' love letters to his wife, Mary Pickford.
There came an auction whereby his love letters to her, going back as early as 1917, were being sold on the open market as a lot. And so, foolishly or wisely, I don't know what, I bid against all the dealers and ended up winning the lot. And there I was with this precious box of letters.
Blair Murphy, who lives in a former Pennsylvania hotel that is haunted.
It was created around 1880s, and it was a coal mining town, and so this was a brothel in the center of that town. They were going to tear it down about 15 years ago, and in a last act, the owners put it on eBay. And I was in Los Angeles, and a friend called me from New Orleans and said, hey, there's this place for a song, 11 grand actually, 32 rooms, whole bar, all that. And so half on a lark, we just relocated to Pennsylvania, the two of us and his wife.
Oh yeah, and they've put the world's largest Ouija board on the roof. More on that later. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0376, was Todd Gallagher, Emperor for Life at Experiment Media, a film, TV, and commercial production company. Emperor for Life, that was his title, not mine, by the way. They have created shows for ABC, ESPN, and MTV, and a variety of other networks and cable outlets. And on top of that, Todd's a very nice guy as well. Check him out at experimentmedia.com. And oh, by the way, he's also the author of Andy Roddick Beat Me with a Frying Pan. You have to get that book, if only for the title. Check it out. Thank you very much, Todd, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Maine man clad in a tree costume, yeah, you heard me right, was arrested when he blocked traffic after being told by police to stay out of the street. Police say 30-year-old Asher Woodworth, and seriously, a guy dressed as a tree named Asher Woodworth? It couldn't get better than that unless his middle name was Branch. Anyway, Asher donned a tree costume reminiscent of camouflage ghillie suits and wandered into a busy downtown Portland intersection. I've seen the pictures, and he looks like a giant cousin It. Woodworth stopped traffic and drew attention as he slowly inched his way across the crosswalk and was soon joined by a pair of police officers who escorted him to the other side. All right, get out of the road or you're going to get arrested, one officer said. The police officer told the man he was free to go with a warning to stay out of the street. I'll accept your silence as your understanding. You're free to go, an officer said. The man wandered back into the street moments later and was arrested. His motivation was to see how people would react to what he called his performance and how he might impact people's natural choreography, Assistant Police Chief Vern Malik told the Portland Press Herald. It happens from time to time, Malik says. People do bizarre things because they want to get arrested. We're still not sure if he was trying to make a statement or not. Woodworth was charged with obstructing a public way and released on $60 bail. Wow, walking across the street slowly, dressed as a tree. What a sap. And a North Carolina judge was charged with bribery after being accused of offering beer and cash to a police officer in exchange for his wife's text messages. Superior Court Judge Arnold Ogden Jones II was found guilty of bribery and other charges in connection with the bribery attempt of a police officer. According to the police investigation, the judge suspected his wife of cheating and he wanted to get his hands on the text messages on her cell phone. The Wayne County police officer, who was also an FBI agent, reported that the judge offered him beer and $100 to get the text messages. The judge vowed to seek re-election despite being convicted of bribery. The judge is facing up to 37 years in prison and up to $750,000 in fines. Gee, I wonder if he and his wife are still on talking terms. They're certainly not texting each other. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a woman was found with an unclasped bra and open shirt after crashing into a police car. Police in Texas said that a college student was arrested after crashing into a police car while trying to get dressed after sending topless photos to her boyfriend. 19-year-old Miranda K. Rader was driving in Bryan, Texas around 8:30 p.m. when she rear-ended a police car that was parked outside a home where officers were investigating a disturbance. Police Officer John Sartle said that he heard the crash and ran to his car, where he found that Rader's SUV hit his patrol vehicle. The officer said that he found the Texas A&M University student with an unclasped bra and trying to put on her top. Sartell asked the teenager why she was topless, and she replied that she was sending Snapchat pictures to her boyfriend while she was waiting at a red light, according to the police report. During a further search of the car, Sartell found an open bottle of wine in the front console. Rader admitted to police that she had been drinking with her friend before driving. She was arrested and charged with driving while intoxicated with an open container. She also received the ticket for being a minor in possession of alcohol. Well, if she goes to jail, at least her boyfriend has pictures to remember her by. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Tippi Hedren is one of the biggest names of classic Hollywood and one of the most famous Hitchcock girls. She's been on the program on several occasions, and we welcome her back because she has just released her new memoir, simply entitled Tippi, A Memoir. She joins us on the line from California. Hi, Tippi.
Hello, Peter.
Nice to talk to you once again.
It's good to talk to you as well.
Thank you very much. One of the things of... it's always interesting. We've chatted so many times. We've talked a lot about your history and your career. And I'm just curious, now that you've written this book and you've gone through the process of putting it down on paper, what did you learn about yourself writing this book?
Oh, I think I'm a pretty gutsy girl.
But I'm sure that's something you already
modest
knew.
Modest, too.
I'm sure that's something you already knew. Did it while collecting your thoughts and putting it down on paper, did it make you rethink your life in any way, shape, or form?
Actually, you mean that I might do things differently or whatever?
No, just looking back at your life and realizing how much you've accomplished. Because sometimes, you know, we don't see the journey unless we look back and reflect as to what we've done.
Yeah, you know, I do that, and I'm thrilled that I have had those doors opened to me, and I find it interesting which of the doors that have been opened to me that I go through, and those that I find interesting and powerful, and how it has really been able to enhance my life.
Which doors are open for you, and more importantly, which doors did you have to burst through on your own?
That's an interesting question. I mean, so much has been offered to me that and I walked through those doors, as, you know, when I started the modeling career, and you know, Ella Jane Knott coming up to me when I got off the streetcar and said, would you ask your mother to bring you down to Donaldson's department store in Minneapolis? We'd like to have you model in our Saturday morning fashion shows. I mean, that was totally out of the blue for me. I had no, I wanted to be an ice skater. I wanted to be a figure skater and be involved in the ice shows. And, you know, I had friends who were doing that. And that was my big dream. And I was never able to fulfill that. But I did other things that came up, you know. So the modeling was a wonderful stepping stone, and when I think about all of the things that I've been able to do because of that, it's been an amazing life.
Well, flash forward to past the modeling career. You become an actress. You get to work with Alfred Hitchcock. Now, as I mentioned, we've chatted on several occasions. Last time we talked was around the time that the HBO film The Girl came out, which talked mm-hmm. about some of the difficulties you had in working with Hitchcock. Now, I know before that movie came out, we had talked about Hitchcock, and you, at the time, kept a lot of the negative side of Hitchcock to yourself. You didn't talk about it for a long period of time. What made you finally reveal that? Because I know you also talk about it in your book.
Because I thought it was a story that should be told, because it was something that I went into very, very civilly and with a mind to really appreciate what had been offered to me and work hard which I did, and you know, it was disappointing and a shock to me to have that you know, that old thing about where somebody wants something from you that you aren't prepared to give. That was a difficult time in my life.
But you survived it. You came through the other side. You are at the head of an acting dynasty. Your daughter and your granddaughter are both actresses, Melanie Griffith and Dakota Johnson. And
aren't they amazing?
Yes, yeah. They are. But I'm just wondering, was there any hesitation on your part when they came to you, or when you first got wind of the idea that they wanted to follow in your footsteps, given some of the difficulties you had earlier in your career?
Okay, but Peter, no matter what vocation a woman goes into, those things can be affecting her no matter what she does. And I think it's just the determination of every woman in the world to make up her mind as to how she wants to act and how she wants to be thought of, and what is important to her. I mean, this doesn't only just happen to people who go into show business.
Well, we're certainly hearing a lot about it, even during the current election campaign.
Yes, exactly.
So. Yes. How you must be very, very proud. I mean, you already mentioned, you know, the success of your daughter and your granddaughter. You must be very, very proud of what they've accomplished.
I am indeed. And they are two very happy women, and well, happy is a silly word. They are content, and are very assured of themselves, and they are really wonderful women.
And the thing I find very interesting about the three of you all together, very successful, but three very different women.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yes, we are. We are. And I chose to take a route with, you know, the protection of animals and making people aware of their importance and their need to be respected, and I'm very, very content with operating the Shambhala Preserve, where we rescue big cats that have been either mistreated or abandoned or whatever, and giving them a home where they can be not in a little cage, but they have large areas in which to roam and be who they, you know, you can't let them go free, you know, you can't do that, but at least we can give them some semblance of respect and, you know, enjoy them and appreciate them for who they are. Apex predators.
You have been an animal activist for quite some time, ever since, I guess, doing the movie Roar, if not before that. And I understand that part of the proceeds of your book, Tippi, a memoir, is going to the Roar Foundation, right?
Oh, yes. Absolutely, it is.
Do you...
That's very important to me.
Do you feel that a lot of what you're talking about is finally sinking in and by that I mean there are animals in captivity that really shouldn't be? Is the word getting out? Is the tide turning as far as you're concerned?
I think it is. I think people are becoming more aware of the fact that these lions and tigers are apex predators and that have no business being sold as pets or being bred to be sold as a pet. Because they are dangerous, and you can't take those instincts out of them. There's nothing you can do to take those instincts out.
The book, Tippi, a Memoir, is but a chapter of your life, but certainly not the final chapter. What still has to be written as far as the life of Tippi Hedren is concerned? What would you like to do that you haven't done?
Well, you know, I've had such a full, wonderful life I'm waiting for the next door to open and see if I like what's on the other side, and if I do, I will walk through it. But I'm very, very content right now, and I'm still, you know, very, very much involved with the Roar Foundation and the Shambhala Preserve. And you know, there are always people who need to be awakened to the fact that these animals are not pets and should never be pets. And I think there has been progress made on those levels. And I think there aren't that many who see a little tiny lion or tiger cub and say, oh, I've got to have it, because they are aware of the fact that they will grow up to be apex predators.
Hmm. In addition to your book coming out, just out, you also are featured in Vanity Fair with your daughter and granddaughter. What was that like?
Yes. Oh, it was fun. It was great, and I was very honored that the three of us were chosen for that issue, and I hope everybody gets it and reads about it. And we had a very, very good time doing it. It was wonderful for us to be together and had fun doing the photographs. So it was a wonderful day.
Well, congratulations on the book. The book is entitled Tippi, a Memoir, and I thank you very much for chatting with us once again.
Well, you're always wonderful to talk to. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for those wonderful words about the book.
Actress Tippi Hedren. Again, her new book is Tippi, a Memoir. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0376, and you'll find links to Tippi's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of The First King of Hollywood, The Life of Douglas Fairbanks. Plus, we'll talk to a guy in Pennsylvania who lives in a haunted hotel. Yes. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way, and of course, lots more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A large animal rescue unit from St. Johns County, Florida, raced to Flagler County to save a 1,200-pound quarter horse, which had stepped on the fiberglass cover to a septic tank. It collapsed, and the horse fell in. Even with assistance from several fire departments and a disaster response team from the University of Florida's College of Veterinary Medicine, it took about 3 hours to rescue the horse, and officials declared it was in, yes, stable condition. Yeah, I know. Too easy. Police in Menasha, Wisconsin, responded to a report of people in clown masks chasing after vehicles. At the scene, officers found two men, aged 20 and 29, dressed in clown costumes, and a 26-year-old woman driving them around. This was actually the second clown-related incident at that location. This is kind of one of those internet sensations that's really taking on a life of its own, said Police Chief Tom Stika. And people are just really starting to make some really poor and dumb decisions to participate in some of these activities. The older man and the woman in this particular incident, however, apparently added some extra dumb to their decisions. The couple have a 4-year-old child, and according to Stika, they had left this 4-year-old girl home alone while they decided to go out to do their clowning activities. The child was removed from the home, and the couple was arrested. Police are seeking charges of child neglect. Proving once again, any clown can have children, but you need a license to have a dog. The U.S. Justice Department revealed in an October filing report in court that former National Security Agency contractor Harold Martin III, who is 51 years of age, had stolen at least 500 million pages of sensitive government files, bit by bit, over 2 decades. Now, that revelation begs at least a few bonus questions. One, how does no one notice for years that he was doing this? And two, and probably most importantly, how many total pages of sensitive government files are there? I mean, if he took 500 million pages and he didn't take them all, that's a lot of pages. Anyway, finally in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we have a couple of stories from the It's Gotta Be Florida file, because, you know, Florida is a special state all to its own. Number one, in October, sheriff's deputies in Pinellas County detained the 350-pound Columbus Henderson, who was 45 years old, and discovered in one of Henderson's orifices a glass crack pipe stuffed with steel wool. Now, a week earlier, Henderson had shoplifted two 40-inch TV sets from a Walmart in Fort Lauderdale and fled, though he was identified when his loosely worn pants containing his ID fell completely off as he dashed through the parking lot. Okay, the fact that a 350-pound shoplifter could have loosely fitting pants is either a sign of extreme optimism or pessimism. I'm not quite sure which one that is. And number two, police say 28-year-old Ms. Takara Nodden had no contraband but was using an orifice for her ID card during a traffic stop in Hollywood, Florida in October. She did not want police to know that she was Takara Nodden since there was an arrest warrant out for her. Yeah, that's pretty much the same premise as an ATM slot, isn't it? Ooh. Who gets to handle that card, by the way, after she takes it out? That's what I want to know. Not everyone loves their jobs. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff Fall program, shall we? Tracy Gosell has written a book that takes you back to the earliest days of film. It's called The First King of Hollywood, The Life and Times of Douglas Fairbanks. And it shares the story of the silent film superstar. Tracy is on the line with us right now from Los Angeles to talk about the book. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. In looking at some of the information about you, I understand you're also on the board of directors of the San Francisco Silent Film Festival, and you're also the founder of the Los Angeles-based Film Preservation Society. So, and now you've written this book. So what is it about this particular era of film that is so enticing to you?
Oh, boy. It's hard to explain to somebody who's not seen a silent film properly presented what the experience truly was and is like. Most people today see silent films on television. They're jerky. They're run at a speed that's projection speed that's too fast because sound projection is 24 frames a second. And silent movies were often filmed anywhere between 16 and 20 frames per second. To sit and see a film as it was originally made, crisp and complete, without all the scratches and the fuzziness of bad dupes and copies, it's a real experience. You're communing with a film in a way that you don't normally commune with a movie that has talking in it. The combination of image and sound hits a different part of your brain than does the addition of words. And I'm sort of qualified to say that because on top of the other things that you described, I'm also a physician. And so I can tell you it really is, from a neural anatomical point of view, a different experience. And so silent movies are the most primal of language and communication, combined with that other most primal form of communication, which is music. That's a complicated and sort of over intellectual explanation for something that was essentially tremendously popular entertainment. And the best answer, I suppose, is to say these are wonderful movies, and they're a lot of fun, and they can be very moving. And there's a subset of the people on the planet who've had a chance to see them as they were originally meant to be seen, who are just as addicted to them as I am.
So you've written this book, The First King of Hollywood, The Life of Douglas Fairbanks, with the many stars that were out there. And of course, he was probably the first and biggest film superstar. But having said that, what led you to him as the subject of a book on early Hollywood?
A couple of things. Great books have already been written about the other important pioneers, Mary Pickford, Charlie Chaplin, later on Buster Keaton. Doug has not had up to that point, a really accurate or well-researched biography. But in particular, I got interested in, or I decided to write the book because I'm a collector, and collectors are crazy people. They're either generalists or completists. And I decided that I wanted to try and collect all the film posters and memorabilia that I could related to Fairbanks and his wife, Mary Pickford. And along the line, there came an auction whereby his love letters to her, going back as early as 1917, were being sold on the open market as a lot. The family was trying to raise money to solve a legal dispute. And dealers were going after this box of love letters with the intention of splitting them up and selling them. And the idea that this very, to me, historically interesting collection of papers would be scattered to the winds to fans and collectors and never be reaggregated was maddening. And so, foolishly or wisely, I don't know what, I bid against all the dealers and ended up winning the lot. This is about 2005, 2006. And there I was with this precious box of letters. I could donate and ultimately will donate them to the Herrick Library at the Motion Picture Academy. But short term, I said, what do I do with these besides protect them from dealers? And I finally decided that they would form the core of a biography, and that if I was going to do a biography, I was going to do an accurate biography. So I started doing a lot of primary source research. Some folks just cut and paste whatever the last guy's book said and kind of put together very elegant book reports. But I decided to go back in every instance to the original tax papers, the original scripts, the original letters, and found a story that was quite different from the one that had been crafted by Fairbanks and sort of by the studio biographers. And by being different, it didn't mean it was less interesting. To my mind, it was even more interesting.
I get a sense when you go back to this time, and for all the things that Douglas Fairbanks did, that there were true pioneers because there was nobody who came before them. So they had to figure out what they were doing. They had to figure out the craft while they were doing it. There's something extremely creative about that, which unfortunately is kind of lost today.
I agree. Filmmaking has always been a collective endeavor. It's not one person with a camera and an actor. It's always involved people looking at the lighting, trying to figure out how to make the image look good, people editing the strips of film, people composing the music, etc. But it was a smaller group of people, and they were more of a collective. The guy who was figuring out the lighting was, you know, probably also the guy who was moving the props around. Now, so much of what we see is CGI. And, you know, when Doug Fairbanks climbed up the side of a building and, you know, jumped off of a roof, he was doing it, and the audience had the knowledge that this was not a clever effect, but that this was indeed somebody who was incredibly physically fit doing an amazing stunt. It occurs to me while we're chatting, we should clarify, many people think of Douglas Fairbanks Jr., who was my guy's son, who was in talking pictures, things like The Prisoner of Zenda. But Doug Sr. was started in film in 1915 and had retired shortly after talking films came. This was a guy upon whom Batman and Superman were later modeled. This is a guy who co-founded the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and ditto for the company United Artists that we all know today. So they were pioneers not only in film craft, but in business structures, and also in the art of becoming a uber celebrity. The more people saw Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks' wife, in one night than had seen Sarah Bernhardt in her entire career. Never before had there been fame on such a scale. People may have recognized the king or the queen from their postage stamps, but very few people ever really got to get more than a glimpse of a king or a queen. But they saw Doug and Mary and Fatty Arbuckle and Lillian Gish and Buster Keaton every 6 weeks in their neighborhood theater, and everybody felt that they knew them. So when these people would appear somewhere in person, there would be tens of thousands of curious heads, you know, swarming the streets wanting to get a glimpse of them. And that just had not happened before, be it for royalty or Jenny Lind or any of the other prior kind of fame phenomenons.
I've got less than a minute, unfortunately. There's so much we can talk about, but I've got to ask this one question, and that is, you seem to know him quite personally. As a matter of fact, you refer to him as Doug, like your close friends. I'm just curious, in doing all your research, what was the biggest revelation you learned about Douglas Fairbanks?
There were so many surprising things. And by the way, I'm not the only one. The newspapers, he was so beloved that people, even in the newsprint, would just refer to him as Doug, not as Mr. Fairbanks. And that in itself was a different phenomenon and a new phenomenon. To me, the most interesting thing I learned is when he built the studio that was later to become the United Artists Studio, he had a trench built underground near his office that was hidden by a wall and office buildings so that he could run daily in the nude, just like the Olympic athletes did back 2,000 years ago, but he would have absolute privacy. No one would see him. So people would be walking down Santa Monica Boulevard fully unaware that 3 feet away and 6 feet under, there was a superstar naked running back and forth in a trench. To me, that's hilarious, and that's absolutely Fairbanksian.
Wow. The book is called The First King of Hollywood, The Life of Douglas Fairbanks. By the way, you have a website that people should go to, thefirstkingofhollywood.com. Also, you discussed lightly your film preservation work. Thefilmpreservationsociety.org is another website. Tracy, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm pleased and delighted to take my 10 minutes with you, Peter.
Tracy Gosell, author of The First King of Hollywood, The Life and Times of Douglas Fairbanks. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0376, and you'll find links to Tracy's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Every year, we hold the Wacky Warning Label Contest, and the person who finds the funniest common sense warning label in America wins a prize of $1,000. Over the years, we've seen some pretty hilarious labels, like the one on a motorized go-kart that warned, "This product moves when used," and a fishing lure with huge hooks that warned, "Harmful if swallowed." But did you know that the first wacky label we ever saw came from a Halloween costume? That's right, it was found on a Batman cape. It warned, "Cape does not enable user to fly." Let's be fair, we've had a lot of fun with that one. And when my own boys were young, they appeared on TV shows in France and Japan wearing that cape. The show's hosts asked why there are so many warnings about common sense things in America. The answer is that with all the frivolous lawsuits the product makers have to defend themselves against in the United States, the courts here can sometimes be even scarier than those Halloween costumes. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Actor actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the owner of the former Grand Midway Hotel, a haunted house in western Pennsylvania that he lives in. And we'll also talk about the Ouija board he has on the roof. It's Guinness-worthy, trust me. And I don't mean the port or the ale. I'm talking about the records people. Anyway, we also have an idiot of the day coming your way as well. Here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right back to the stuff, shall we? A pet parrot squawked to its owner that her hubby was two-timing her with their maid, which nearly landed him in a Kuwaiti jail, according to reports. The tattletale chirped sweet nothings, flirty phrases the man had never said to his wife, confirming her suspicion that he had been cheating, as the story goes in the Arab Times Online. The unnamed woman from Hawali reported her unfaithful hubby to cops, using the bird as proof, according to the paper. Adultery is illegal in the Middle Eastern country, but police say the parrot's bird brain statement wouldn't hold up in court. The wife had suspected for weeks that her spouse was cheating because she had caught him acting nervously when she came home early from work. It's unclear what the parrot in Kuwait said to squeal on its owner. The paper also didn't report the little loudmouth's name or breed, but it's not the first time a parrot has ratted out its owner for cheating. In 2006, a parrot named Ziggy revealed to his owner, Chris Taylor, that his girlfriend, Susie Collins, had been unfaithful. According to the BBC, the bird squawked, "I love you, Gary," revealing the name of her lover. Well, the bird was no stool pigeon. Stool parrot, yes, but no stool pigeon. You know, and I'll bet those cheating spouses are looking up some drumstick recipes right about now. Oh, their foul deeds. And still with birds, leaders of a California college town are working to relocate turkeys that have been harassing people on the streets. The Sacramento Bee reports that the Davis City Council voted this week to approve a wild turkey management plan that includes trapping and relocating many of the birds and possibly killing some of the more aggressive ones. It also called for an ordinance prohibiting people from feeding the turkeys. Davis residents are fond of urban wildlife. They built a tunnel for toads and protected jackrabbits from construction, but the well-known turkeys wandering the streets are too much. Police Chief Darren Pytel says his department has fielded calls from people accosted by turkeys, including a man who was pinned against the wall of a bank by a bird. You know, these turkeys should take a look at the calendar and think about playing nice with the townsfolk. I mean, after all, American Thanksgiving is just weeks away. You don't want to give the townsfolk any creative, tasty ways to solve the problem, do you? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Blair Murphy is an independent filmmaker originally from Los Angeles. He bought the Grand Midway Hotel in Pennsylvania 15 years ago. It's known as one of the most haunted places in western Pennsylvania. He's also seeking to create on the hotel's roof the world's largest Ouija board. Why? Well, we put that question to Blair, who joins us right now on the line from Pennsylvania. Hi, Blair.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Certainly. Pleasure to be here.
First, let's clear up the whole hotel bit. You bought this hotel, but it's no longer a hotel. It's a private home. Is that correct?
Yes. It was created around 1880s. And it was a coal mining town, and so this was a brothel in the center of that town. They were going to tear it down about 15 years ago, and in a last act, the owners put it on eBay. And I was in Los Angeles, and a friend called me from New Orleans and said, "Hey, there's this place for a song that they're $11,000 actually, that 32 rooms, whole bar, all that." And so, half on a lark, we just relocated to Pennsylvania, the two of us and his wife.
Wow. Okay.
But it's not a working hotel though. We had to fix up quite a bit. It was really a shambles. So it's an eccentric home.
Okay. So one of the things you just mentioned, I mean, we knew it was a hotel at one point, and as I said, it's considered one of the most haunted places in western Pennsylvania. But the fact that you said it was a brothel, the idea of a haunted brothel, I think scares me more than anything else.
Quite a few people have, it doesn't scare me, but quite a few people have mentioned the sexual energy residue as part of the building's character, so it's there.
Okay, so what brought your attention to me and a lot of people in the media is you're getting a lot of media coverage right now around the Halloween period, no surprise, but you're putting a giant Ouija board, as I mentioned in the introduction, on the roof. First of all, how did this come about? How did this come about, and why are you doing it?
Well, I'm a little bit P.T. Barnum-ish in that I like to play with cultural things and kind of toy with things outside the box. And so we had this roof that was a blank canvas. So we were all artists that moved in here, and so everything was looked at as a canvas. And every room was taken over as a kind of canvas. And then we had the roof itself. And this past winter, there was a lot of Ouija stuff in the air around the building. We just started getting talking, and we thought, I wonder about if there's a world's largest Ouija board. And I wrote the Guinness Book of World Records, and they said, no, there isn't. They would create a category for us if we actually attempted it called largest talking board. So we had to wait till the weather changed, and we just went for it. It was just kind of fun, to be honest with you.
So, first of all, how many stories is this building?
It's three floors, and then there was another floor that was hidden we didn't know about. This was a magnificent find. There's no way to get to the roof, and so at one point we couldn't figure it out. There's no fire escape. There's no access to the roof. So we just sawed a hole in a room in the ceiling, and there was this entire sealed-up attic above our third floor that even the owners who sold us the place 15 years ago weren't aware of. And it's the size of the building, so it's massive. It looks like in the middle of a whale with all the ribs, but they're wood beams. And so that was a neat find as well. So there's another floor that just popped up.
Well, the reason I ask you how many floors it is I'm not familiar with the area in western Pennsylvania that you're in. So are there a lot of tall buildings around? And again, the reason why I ask is you've got this Ouija board on the roof now. Can anyone see it who's not in a plane or flying a drone?
I think I'm looking at my neighbor's place right now out back, and I think everyone can just sort of see. They can certainly see us up on the roof doing weird stuff at night with lights. And it's a flat roof, and it's higher than most of the houses here, but you can just catch a little bit of it from the back part.
So, as I mentioned, there's a lot of media attention about this. Were you surprised by the media attention it's garnering, and how far afield have you heard from people?
I was a little surprised at the immediacy. I just leaked a photo or two on Facebook. I wasn't going to announce it until after we won through Guinness, which hopefully will be in the next 2 weeks. But suddenly one reporter called and said, are the rumors true? And so I don't know what he heard. And then a television crew came. And that the next day after that television crew came, I had people calling me from all over the USA, Oklahoma and Virginia. And somehow this same footage got replayed over and over again. Now you're calling from Canada. And we had a woman from Europe the other day that was here. She was here to film the politicians in town. And she ran over here and grabbed this story as well. And so it's all over the place. Very quickly.
The Grand Midway Hotel is already known, as I mentioned, as one of the most haunted places in western Pennsylvania. That alone should garner a certain amount of curiosity from people who just drop by wanting to check the place out, even though it's a private home. I would assume now that you've got this giant Ouija board on the roof and you're getting attention for it, that you're going to get all kinds of people you never suspected or expected to receive at your doorstep.
Yes, that's true. I think that's an issue, yeah.
Are you prepared for that?
Well, I had a pretty big, scary-looking dog for a while there, and so I might get another dog. But I'm open to whatever. You know, I wasn't worried about the ghost aspect, and my methods are more like go toward what people go the opposite direction and push it to the limit. And so I guess I don't know what's coming down the pike, but I'm meeting it halfway. I'm racing toward it as opposed to we better keep this quiet.
Now I understand the Ouija board that you put up there on the roof is it's 44 by 29 feet, correct?
That's my estimation, and we have a surveyor coming on Friday who's going to have lasers and do it down to the bazillionth of an inch.
Now, is that the size that was only limited by the size of the roof, or could you have gone bigger, or what?
Well, we could have gone bigger if we had turned the board the other way. It would have been, there's even more rooftop. But Guinness gave us a size, and we made it larger than the size that Guinness requested, a starting size. And right now it looks aesthetically nice on the roof. If someone tops that and we have to go larger, I'll repaint it and make it larger.
Now, one of the things about a Ouija board is there's the part of it that moves.
The planchette, it's called.
I'm sorry?
A planchette.
Okay, so how did you create that?
Well, we had a small team of artists, and basically everyone took a little piece of what they had to create, six people. And so one guy, I said, I need a planchette. And so he found a board large enough and put a window into it, and another one of the other artists that painted it. And it's pretty simple. We put it on wheels and hoist it up on the roof, and it actually looks pretty cool the way it zips around.
Excellent. Now, even though you're not necessarily looking for the most attention in the world for all of this, you are offering tours of your home. When do they take place, and what do they charge? What do you charge?
Well, last year I did it just for one night. We opened up the place, and the line went around the block. I had no idea I was going to get even that much local attention, to be honest with you. And because this is a very conservative area, and I don't really know what the reactions are going to be. I'm an outsider as well. But this year, we did it for two nights as an experiment, and I said if it grows, because it really seemed to be satisfying last year, opening the place up to the community for a full hotel tour. And so this year it went fabulous again, and we got more requests for later this month. And so we might actually really expand it next year into a whole month of October kind of thing.
Cool. And
I charged $10 at the door, but it takes about 2 hours to go through, and quite a few volunteers helped out to station every single room. And so I felt real good about it.
And in the time you've had the house, because you've had the house for 15 years, how long have you lived in it? Was it actually that long?
Yes, I relocated from the beaches of Los Angeles into this ice cold. Oh, it was miserable in the beginning. We had no heat, and the windows needed to be replaced. The roof needed to be replaced. It was just a plumbing. Everything was a mess in this place. And so those early days, I said, if I'm not living here, I didn't relocate to this little town to live somewhere else. So I stayed, I've been here every day. And if I was to move out, I'd go back to Los Angeles. I wouldn't.
And
so it's been quite a trial.
And besides dealing with the initial cold when you were there, since you've lived there for 15 years, have there been any Scooby-Doo spooky moments for you while you're living there?
Yeah, the place is, I mean, I'm not really trying to convince anybody of anything. And I know when people talk like this, I even roll my eyes and think, whatever. But yeah, I've gone through quite a few creepy moments here. I was raised in a funeral home. My parents are funeral directors and carners. And so I've been around dead bodies and coffins since my whole life. And I'm very comfortable with all that. Actually, it's familiar in a family way, and oddly. And so when I moved in here, I didn't understand what I was feeling at first. I was really pretty creeped out, and I called a couple author friends of mine, and it was the same thing there. Like, it just took off, and suddenly we had John Zavis from The Haunted Collector and quite a few other shows approached us, and we weren't expecting the attention that it got. I didn't buy it I would have bought it as an investment that way if I had known, but I'm delighted now that I'm here, and I'm proud to be that way.
Well, people can find out more information by going to your website, which is grandmidwayhotel.com. That's grandmidwayhotel.com. Blair, in advance, I'm going to say congratulations, because I know you're going to win the largest Ouija board category in Guinness. I mean, who's competing with you, honestly? So congratulations on that feat, and thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, certainly. I appreciate it. I appreciate the attention. You know, here's a quick note. I don't know if you can fit this in. We're right where the movie Slapshot was filmed, the hockey movie.
Right.
That's the community we're in. And so we're always, it's a depressed area. People are always mentioning, but they like us in Canada. So whatever that's worth.
Great. That's Blair Murphy, who lives in the former Grand Midway Hotel, one of the most haunted places in western Pennsylvania, in the home of where they filmed the movie Slapshot, as you just heard him say. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0376, and you'll find links to Blair's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Two masked teenagers with a loaded gun were arrested early Friday after an Oceanside, California convenience store was robbed. The pair are suspected in a string of armed holdups in the area, including five at the same 7-Eleven store. An officer was keeping the area under surveillance because of the robbery series at convenience stores in Oceanside and Vista. A robbery alarm was triggered at 2:15 a.m. at the 7-Eleven on Oceanside Boulevard east of South Coast Highway. The officer got there in less than a minute and saw two people driving away. Police stopped the vehicle and arrested the driver and passenger, both 17-year-old boys. Officers found a loaded handgun, two realistic-looking BB guns, masks, clothing, and a plastic bag in the vehicle. The two were taken to juvenile hall. They are suspected of robbing the same 7-Eleven store, as I've mentioned, five times, as well as an AM/PM store, several of them actually in Vista, California. It makes life a lot easier when the police can basically wait for you to show up again. I mean, why? Oh, why? Would you rob the same 7-Eleven store five times in a short period of time? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0376. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links to all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0376. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mama jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.